Live and local.
KFI AM 640.
An iHeart radio station.
Handle on the news. Late edition.
Handle on the news.
Here we go.
And now, here's Bill Handel.
Good morning, Bill Handel here. Yeah, it's Friday, February 26th, and we have a super segment of the news this morning, as we do every Friday. Coming up at 9:30 is Foodie Friday with Neil Saavedra. That's how we end our week, but let's get right into Handle on the News, late edition. Get everybody here. Do I have everybody on the FaceTime? No. If you call me back, that would be terrific. All right. Lead story. Massive fire in Compton. Several structures, a bunch of buses in an industrial complex. And is it arson? We don't know. But when you talk about industrial fires, the first assumption is that there was some kind of a gas leak or electrical fire, depending on how old the building is.
I think part of the issue, I think, that made it so huge, too, was there were a whole bunch of propane tanks on this. And it housed, according to neighbors anyway, there were a lot of chemicals here, and that they were upset that they were even being stored, I guess, this closely to where all of these different vehicles were being stored, which was all right near where homes are. So it just sort of seems like a big mess in this area.
Yeah, you've ever been in one of those yards that stores propane tanks and they're near buildings and you don't think about it because... Where are you going to put propane tanks? In the South 40, of which you don't own the land. And so they start exploding. But boy, when they start exploding, the fireworks, I mean, they're bombs that go off and shrapnel. You don't want to get anywhere near an exploding propane tank.
All right. Well, the good news in this next story is that the number of COVID-19 hospitalizations has hit a 3-month low in L.A. County. In fact, it looks like over the last week, hospitalizations have been going down about 5% every day. So as of Wednesday of this week, we had 1,800 people just a little over in the hospital. And it was in January. On January 5th, we had the highest number. We were almost at 8,100 cases at this point. But the county also said that it noted 10 additional cases of this multi-inflammatory syndrome that has been associated with COVID-19 that seems to impact kids. So now we're up to about 100 kids in LA County who have this. I'm not sure if they call it. I've heard it both ways. MISC or Miss C.
Yeah, it's pretty serious stuff. When that story first came out, it was two or three people or one person.
Yeah.
And it was dismissed as so aberrational. Except now with 100 kids, it may not be so aberrational. And it's a mess. I mean, this is not fun to get. Not that COVID is fun anyway, but for kids, this is god-awful.
Meanwhile, FDA vaccine advisory panel's meeting today to discuss the Johnson & Johnson vaccine and recommend perhaps authorization.
Everybody is on shots.
Seems like they probably will,
yeah,
based on what we know about it. And that means by this weekend sometime, there could be official emergency use authorization from the FDA. First, the panel makes their recommendation, and then the FDA has to act.
And the feds expect that Johnson & Johnson will be shipping 4 billion doses to the feds day one. So add another 4 million doses, and, well, you know, we're doing okay. Yesterday in the U.S., 1.8 million doses administered. So we're hitting, we're probably going to be hitting in the twos very quickly, then 2.5, and I'll bet you'll be at 3 million very quickly. We've already hit 50 million people. I think it was, the president yesterday he had a ceremony, but these numbers are really weird because it's first, second doses. How many people have gotten one? How many people are fully inoculated? We've gotten a second wave. And then when Johnson & Johnson hits, that number is going to be skewed because that's a one dose. And then when the third booster comes out, which is going to happen because you already have Pfizer working on the booster for the variants, they're talking about you could have a third one and then every year it'll be like the flu shot.
As to the confusion about these numbers, the moment that they have a specific protocol in place for a booster, a third booster, does that mean all the people who are being counted now as having been fully vaccinated come off the list of those who are fully vaccinated because now they got to get a third booster?
And you could see
the numbers drop?
You could.
For a
because
while?
It sure. depends on the how you define fully vaccinated. And so the numbers really are not easy to keep track of.
Well, more Americans now plan to get the COVID-19 vaccine as soon as possible. And when it comes to what you were just talking about, Wayne, the number of people who have been fully vaccinated, so they have both shots, we're looking at more than 6% now of the country has been fully vaccinated. According to the CDC, you've got more than 13% of the adult population who's gotten at least one dose, but you still have a notable percentage of Americans who have concerns. One in five saying they're reluctant to get the vaccine. 7% of adults say they would only get the vaccine if it was required. 15% say they won't get it at all. No way. Whatever the case may be, Black Americans and young adults say they want to wait and see how the vaccine works for people who already got it.
Well, they kind of know how the vaccine works for people who already have it.
Well, what I think, though, is they are seeing, and what's interesting is I've noticed that of my friends who have gotten it, who are critical care workers who have gotten both, most of them all have just gotten the one shot, they've gotten sick. They've gotten sick from it, and that's caused their spouse or significant other to go, whoa, I saw they had it. I don't want to get that.
Yeah, but everybody knows it doesn't take a genius to know there are side effects.
Right.
Even with a flu vaccine, your arm can be sore for a couple of days. You have mild symptoms of the flu, headachy. You have you wake up kind of achy, you know, very flu-ish, but not anywhere near like you have the flu. You know, the flu to have.
Let me just tell you, though. So my mom just got her first shot and said she felt like she got hit by a Mack truck. I mean, it took her down to where she said it was just like any horrible flu she'd ever had. The nausea, the whole night, she got a rash on her arm. Everything that they said could be. But then I had young cousins who are, say, in their early 20s who saw what happened to my mom and went, oh, hell no, I'm not going through what Debbie went through. That's crazy.
Yeah, unless you get COVID.
Well, then that's where my mom goes, but at least if I get COVID now, at least it won't be as bad.
Right.
And so, I mean, I don't know, but they're watching it and they're watching other people who have gotten it and seeing those reactions.
Okay, so you have a reaction. My partner, Saville, got his first shot and he had a reaction. I mean, he lost a day of work. He woke up with headaches and he felt nausea and he was fine the day afterwards, achy. And then he went in for a second shot and he thought that was really going to hit nothing.
Yeah. Well, my dad's,
nothing.
My dad's had both of his and nothing. No headache, no nothing. He's great. He's fine. He's good to go. So I don't know.
Well, today I'm going in mine. I'll report.
Yeah.
I will report on Monday. If I sound chipper tomorrow and handle on the law, it's probably a recording.
Well, Scott got his yesterday and was up in the attic running cable last night. So it is everybody. It impacts everybody differently.
Hey, a federal judge has just said that the federal eviction moratorium, you know, where the CDC said you can't kick anybody out for a while. This federal judge said that's unconstitutional. Oh, here's an interesting thing about it, though. His primary reason for saying it's unconstitutional is that it never has been done before.
Yeah,
that's the main thrust of his argument is that, well, we didn't do it during the Great Depression. We didn't do it during the Spanish flu pandemic. Right. So therefore, when government does something new, it's presumptively unconstitutional. I'm not sure exactly what his thinking
is. Well, this is a weird judge. Arguing that the CDC's eviction moratorium is unconstitutional because it never had been used before. And he quoted the pandemic. Problem is, there was no CDC in 1918.
Yeah.
So how does he then argue it hasn't been used before?
Yeah, it's an apples and oranges argument.
Oh, it's crazy. It makes no sense. I mean, this is as political a decision as you can get. It'll be overturned. I mean, there's no issue that this is going to be overturned. I can't imagine the Court of Appeals saying, oh, you're right, because the CDC didn't do this before, they can't do it now. Oh, it doesn't matter. The CDC didn't exist before. Yeah, come on. Really?
The president and the first lady are heading to Texas to survey the damage caused by the winter storms there.
Deep in the heart of Texas.
The president's going to meet with local leaders and just look at what the storm damage was, the relief efforts, the progress. He'll be joined by the governor there. And I thought it was interesting that the press secretary mentioned for the president that, hey, in other words, we're not going to go there and try and figure out exactly what went wrong. We're just going there to look at what it is, what recovery is being done. And then once we get that established, we'll go back and start finger pointing. Which seems like a good way to go about it. Focus your efforts where they're needed.
Yeah, and help people who need help, because that's more important than figuring out who to blame.
Right.
You have a long timeline to figure out who to blame and hold accountable and sue and fine and all of that. But people need food and water and stuff right now.
Oh, yeah.
One of the, I'm going to argue controversies about the president showing up to any of these disaster areas, and I'm going to compare what happened with George W. Bush, and that is Hurricane Katrina hit. And he overflew New Orleans in a helicopter and would not go down to New Orleans. And he was nailed for that. And his argument was, I am not going to take the resources out of this area. Do you know what it takes in terms of resources to have a president show up? And I would argue this. I don't know why Joe Biden wouldn't do the same thing, because then it becomes a photo op. I mean, what does, a president showing up and it becomes a photo op? It's like Ted Cruz after he got caught in Cancun. Next photo is there he is doling out water to people and making sure that there are 56 cameras around there. And you multiply that tenfold, a hundredfold when you talk about a president getting in and we're doing that. So I'm not a big fan of the president showing up. I'm really not. And if he's surveying the damage, do it by air. You know, get a helicopter up there and fly overhead. Don't go on the ground. Don't have anybody there. You don't want the military there. If it's FEMA, I let them stay working. So I don't happen to be a big fan of that.
If you woke up this morning and thought, I feel like I don't have enough things to worry about, this story is for you. Yeah, apparently we are having a very active avalanche season this year. 32 confirmed fatalities so far, and most of that is in the West, where we live, and here's why. So you have, because we had some snowfall in the fall, and then a long dry period, and I don't understand the mechanism of it because I'm not a meteorologist, but that makes the bottom layer of snow very weak. Then later you get more snow on top of it, but it's sitting on top of a weak base, and that makes things more susceptible to dislodge and swallow people up.
Hooray.
I don't ski.
I mean, you don't have to worry about it for your own personal safety unless you're going to go up into areas where there's a ton of snow on the ground.
And you're not.
But it's just another, it's like the planet is really going, how much can they take?
Yeah, and it's it normally doesn't hit in the bunny runs where I have spent several hours trying to learn how to ski.
All right. California has allocated $1.4 million to track and to stop attacks on Asian Americans. And we heard this right at the beginning of the pandemic, that Asian Americans were being verbally attacked for the most part, occasionally physically attacked. That seems to be kind of the case, too, when you look at the number of incidents. But I just reported on one yesterday. There was a young Marine who was in Koreatown walking down the street. Two guys come up, push him down, are yelling racial slurs at him, including Chinese virus. And his just seems to be one case of many. And usually the attacks always, I shouldn't say always, often have something attached to the China virus or the China flu or whatever the case may be.
Do you remember when 9/11 hit and the Iranians got nailed? American Iranians got totally nailed, as well as other Arab Americans. They couldn't go outside the house. They couldn't wear Muslim garb. I mean, there was that much hatred. And the shame of it was, and the same thing when we went to war against Iraq, against Saddam Hussein, the discrimination was completely insane. And it didn't matter how many times I said, you don't understand. I'm against this guy. That's why I left. I'm an American. Didn't want to hear it. You know, racism runs rampant. That's why everybody's working so hard. Not everybody, because there are plenty of racists out there. That's why, because so many institutes and organizations. As a matter of fact, coming up at 9 o'clock, I'm going to jump on that particular topic.
L.A. Mayor Eric Garcetti saw nothing. He was deposed in a lawsuit by police officer Matthew Garza, who was one time part of Garcetti's security detail. Garza says that an ex-political aide to Garcetti, Rick Jacobs, grabbed him, groped him, made a bunch of sexually inappropriate comments, pulled him in for a hug, said that he was handsome, etc. And the mayor says, I never saw anything like that. And I don't believe it because that doesn't sound like Rick Jacobs. This is the fatal flaw sometimes that people make. And I found this out a lot when I was dealing with federal criminal cases. People will do terrible things, and the other people in their lives, they just have no idea that the person was capable of it. So they end up looking like chumps. Oh, he would never do anything like that. Oh, yeah, well, here's irrefutable evidence that he did. Now what?
Now, you keep on saying, I don't believe it. He would never do that. I mean, that, what else position are you going to take?
All right. I'm sure this wife never thought that her husband would try and bury her alive at Coronado Beach.
Like a horse and carriage.
But apparently that is what happened. So this couple goes to the beach. They get in an argument at the beach. It escalates. Now, apparently the husband starts attacking his wife and tries to throw her into the ocean, right? I guess that doesn't work. So then he picks her up, finds a hole that kids have probably been digging, like they probably were doing a sandcastle or something. There's a hole. He throws her in the hole and then starts kicking sand on her, throwing sand on her. Now, he eventually stops and runs away, and the wife does get out, and he was arrested, of course, but that's a new one.
I don't know how new it is. I mean, people try to bury themselves all the time. It's probably new at that particular lifeguard stand in Coronado. Plenty of horrific stories like that.
Oh, that's awful.
All right. A woman from Florida is suing her town over more than $100,000 in parking fines.
Yeah, she started in the parking lot.
Oh, man. This is a great case for you, Bill, on Handle on the Law. Here's the thing. Fined for parking in her own driveway because I guess the way the driveway is configured, part of her car was on her own front lawn. And so they just kept writing. I think every day they were writing tickets. They also went after her for the condition of the driveway. There was a fence on her property that was something was wrong with it. So she feels like she's being totally harassed by the town over this.
She might, except the courts are going to hold that the civil authorities, the city, has wide discretion in determining what fines are. Now, obviously, if it was a $100,000 fine for a single incident, but if this goes years and years and she just ignores it and then comes back and says, oh, no, that's way excessive. I don't know if the courts are going to agree with her. I mean, there may be some kind of negotiation where, okay, you come up with 20 grand or 15 grand or whatever, and the court may say you come up with 20, we'll dismiss. But I don't know where she's going to go with that.
You don't let that situation go until you've racked up over $100,000 in those fines. You nip that in the bud when you see that the city's going to be on your butt about it. You got to take action much sooner than
you know, for example, let's say you have a car that's on cinder blocks and it's on your property and it's your car. And there's an ordinance saying you can't do that, but it's my car on my property. Okay. In the meantime, here's the ordinance. And if you ignore it over a period of a month or 2 months, it kicks into $1,000 a day if you keep on ignoring it. Those have been upheld. Yeah. Now, $100,000, is that excessive? I'd nail her if I was the judge. I would absolutely nail her.
It's the thing, but you already said it. The difference between a $100,000 fine for one time, I think that would be unconstitutional. That's way disproportionate. But if she's racked up dozens of these infractions,
hundreds,
you've got to split it down. How much is it per infraction, and is that grossly disproportionate?
Especially if it's the same fine that anybody else would get nailed for under the same circumstances. But as you pointed out, the first time you get a fine, you go, okay, let's figure this out. As a matter of fact, the first time you get a warning where they come out and say, hey, you can't do this. Move your car. All right, we're done.